welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. This is the summer solstice, and in spite of all the horrific garbage that's going off, that's going on. Did I say off? Regardless of all the horrific garbage that's going on, I have something to share with you about the summer solstice coming up here fairly quickly, probably. I don't know where to begin tonight. There is a, I think it's tonight, isn't it? There's a fundraiser on Larry King on CNN tonight. Is that tonight? CNN, Larry King, a fundraiser for the people in the Gulf, Gulf Coast area. It's been going on. When did it start? 8 o'clock. This is, people are being asked to help out where it concerns the disaster in the Gulf. I'm not sure how people are supposed to do that since we have 20 million or 25 million people unemployed in this country or underemployed. But CNN is doing this. Bless their heart, Larry King. Larry King, whose contract runs out next year and will be gone from CNN. But, you know, when I heard about this, I thought, you know, why not, instead of holding fundraisers after a disaster like the one that is ongoing in the Gulf of Mexico that is destroying all life in the Gulf of Mexico, instead of doing that, why not hold great big old public meetings along the Gulf Coast prior to digging or blasting an exploratory well like Deepwater Horizon that may or may not affect the people in that area? Why not present to them and say, look, here's the deal. We want to dig a hole in the earth 5,000 feet below sea level that will go down another 15 or 20,000 feet because we found oil. And the risk is, well, here's what the risk is. If this thing were to blow up, blah, 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 and then present to the people of the coastal areas of Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida, present to those people whose lives and livelihoods and culture depends on not having an eruption like this, present to them, here's the best case scenario. Here's the worst case scenario. What do you want to do, folks? Do you want to roll the dice? Or do you want us to go away? What do you want? What's more important to you, the oil industry and our profits, or, and all the jobs that we give to all you people down here, all you small people? A lot of you have jobs in the oil industry. A lot of you work for us, for BP. Do you want those jobs or do you want to risk everything? What do you want to do? But see, they don't do that. They don't do that. I wonder what the residents of the Mississippi Gulf Coast, Mississippi, I call it Mississippi, but Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. I wonder, had they been presented with a disaster scenario like we are now experiencing in the United States, I wonder how the people, what their opinion would have been. I wonder if they would have said, hell no! We don't want that! And also today, I heard reports, watched some reports on, I guess it was CNN, MSNBC, someplace. Of all the families, all the small businesses along the Gulf Coast that are dying, just dying economically, people desperate to get compensation from BP. Remember, all this compensation's been promised, right? Now, I realize the Republicans don't want the people in the Gulf Coast to be paid anything. Joe Barton was absolutely right as far as the Republican Party is concerned. Ah, screw them! It's a shakedown! We know where the Republican Party stands. We know where these half-assed libertarians like Rand Paul stand. But what about the people in the areas affected? What about them, huh? What about them? They're supposed to be getting compensation to take care of the cost of the businesses that they have lost and will never, ever get back again. Ever. Not in their lifetimes. Maybe their grandchildren, unborn today, will be able to go back to the Gulf Coast area 40 years from now and start shrimping. All those promises made by BP, Tony Hayward, the Obama administration, the $20 billion, what did Barton call it? Shakedown money. What a bastard he is, huh? But, you know, his apology was bogus. Joe Barton spoke the truth for the Republican Party when he opened his mouth. So did the 100-member Republican, what is it, the reelection committee? All of them. So when somebody says just Joe Barton, hog's not. So did Michelle Bachmann. So did Sarah Palin. But 100 members, Republican members of the U.S. House, said the same thing before Joe Barton did, that it's a shakedown. So don't kid yourself. You people are going to vote Republican. Go ahead. Vote Republican. Cut your own throats. Just keep doing it. I want to see the Republicans win. I want to see them get control of the House and the Senate and the presidency. And that way, this country will end quickly, brutally, and we can get on with trying to rebuild the society or not. But I digress. All this compensation that the Gulf residents are supposed to get, where is it? There was a piece of video I saw today. People in Louisiana, or was it Mississippi? Could have been Alabama. Who at 8 o'clock in the morning would be getting on their boats going out to do the business that they've done for generations. Shrimping, crabbing, lobstering, fishing, whatever. Only now they're not lining up to get their boats in. What they're lining up for is free food. Now Rand Paul and libertarians would close that down in a second. Rush Limbaugh would tell those people, get out of there, go get in a dumpster. But working people, the small people, you remember them, that the chairman of BP referred to, small people. Lost in translation, I don't give a damn, small people. What were they doing today when they wanted to be working? Lining up for free food. Where's the compensation? Where's the money? These are people who have rent or mortgage payments not being paid. Truck payments not being paid. Tuition for their kids not being paid. Clothing not being paid. Food not being paid. Lies. All lies. Lies from the Obama administration. Lies from the Bush administration. Lies from the Clinton administration. And lies from capitalist America. Lies from BP. Every single bit of it. A lie. A lie. So there are the people down in the Gulf Coast lining up to get a handout, to get free food. People who 90 days ago were working their asses off making a living. Where's the money, BP? Where's the force, Obama administration, to make them pay? You all stink. Every one of you in government and you capitalists, you stink.
to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
It is 21 past the hour. You know, if you listen to media reports, the news, so to speak, I don't care where you get it. This is not true with the New York Times, because, you know, the written word is always, I think written news reports, I'm not touting the New York Times, I'm just saying, written news reports are a lot more lucid and fact-checked than video reports. So aside from McClatchy and the New York Times and you know, several print outlets, aside from them, what we are getting from the media is precise propaganda that we are supposed to be getting vis-a-vis this this horror, especially where it concerns the people down there in the Gulf Coast region. Until you see a video report, a couple leak their way through, like the one that I saw today. People lined up to get surplus food or donated food because nothing has happened there for 2 months. And one starts to become a cynic. One starts to think, well, nothing's going to happen. This is Katrina all over again. An entire section of the country, only this time it's bigger, much bigger than what happened in South Louisiana, being abandoned. With all this talk, where's the money? And you start to realize that the lies being told us are deliberate lies because, you know, you can't make, the framers of the Constitution knew that decisions regarding self-governance could not be made unless there was a free press. That's why the First Amendment to the Constitution ensures a free press. That was then. This is now. It's funny how the framers warned against corporate power, and for the most part, media are now owned by corporations. Hey, out in Los Angeles the other day, on the first day without a state budget, California does not have a state budget now. They're I don't know what they're going on. Promises? This is according to, this was in the Times. And on the first day without a state budget, the men and women of God gathered in prayer at the Capitol to beg that he guide the mortals in closing a gap of biblical proportions. I guess this was up in Sacramento. A day after California lawmakers missed the June 15 deadline to have a budget in place, leaders representing 10 faiths sought divine wisdom last Wednesday. This country is collapsing. This country is going right down a medieval sewer someplace. Well, you know, what's next? What's next? Are we going to burn witches? Will that help? The leaders, leaders representing these 10 faiths offered prayers and demanded that God occupy a seat at the budget negotiating table. God should join the big five, the governor and the four ranking Senate and Assembly leaders. Sarah Nichols of the Center for Spiritual Awareness. Sarah is a former lobbyist and minister in training with the non-denominational religious community that organized the event. The Center for Spiritual Awareness. Sarah says, we are calling for a big six. You know, God. Representatives of the five mortals at the table, the governor and the two leaders of the House and the Senate, or the Assembly and the Senate, said they would take whatever help they could get. A spokesman for Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger said, quote, this is going to be a tough budget, so we appreciate the support. I mean, the country is like Greg Palast has said, and before him, Kurt Vonnegut, This country has become an armed madhouse. We have religious fruitcakes running around, invoking the name of God to meet a state budget? What kind of madness is this? And you know the God they're referring to. They're referring to the God that the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims declare individually is the only true God, even though it's the same God. But they're willing to kill all three of those groups are willing to slaughter and butcher each other over definitions of that particular Allah, Yahweh, Jehovah, whatever. So they're all praying to the same God, aren't they? This is madness. This is absolute madness. We'll be back in a second. Stay with us. Souls of my faith, burn the palms of both my hands. If I could learn and be complete, if I could walk righteously again, cause I won't get right with God. Yes, you know you got to get right with God.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Stop this car, baby, get in. It is 25 before the hour. This is not very long, but I want to share it with you. It's about the summer solstice, which has occurred today. This is the longest day of the year, and of course, here in the northern hemisphere, and of course, the days now begin to get shorter as of today. Bridget sent this to me. It's her writing. And tonight, after Kathy and Molly had their moment together, I laid in bed with Molly and read this to her. Some of it she got, but some of it, you know, is a little bit too esoteric for her almost six-year-old mind. But she got the parts that I wanted her to get. This is called Summer Solstice, The Oak King. The young oak tree waves its tall arms, stretches summer green leaves, and revels in golden rays of late afternoon sun. Although the bottom branches are bare, the leaves having been a special treat for munching deer, the upper limbs are full, extending ever higher beyond the tallest stag's reach. We planted this tree for balance shortly after we moved to this place. Holly is abundant here at Woodland Springs, but oak was nowhere to be found. This won't work, the fairies said. How can you navigate the yearly tug of war between the Holly King and the Oak King if only one is dancing on the land? Soon after, the English oak came as a gift, and we snugged its root ball into the earth where it could keep a watchful eye on the house. In a climate where rain and gray skies abound, it's a blessing to look out the window and be reminded that the young Oak King stands as a guide to lead the sun back to our realm. The sun, with its vibrant life force power, is seen by most cultures as male energy, and its journey between zenith and nadir is depicted in many ways. For the fairies, who are creatures of earth and nature, the image of the sun's journey is seen as the eternal battle dance between the Oak King, who is born at midwinter and rules until the summer solstice, and the Holly King, who presides over the other half of the year. The Oak King was born at midwinter, in the moment of greatest darkness, and has grown strong through the waxing year. His energy flows through the young stag who leaps across the meadow, his growing antlers still covered with the fuzz he will later rub off on the trees. The blackberries have not yet set their blossoms. The swallow hatchlings have not yet left the nest, and it feels as though the summer is just beginning. In this time of midsummer, the promise of abundance is everywhere as seeds burst from the ground, flowers explode in a dazzling array of color, and all creatures that live and breathe are busy multiplying and growing. The sun warms our skin, pulls rich scents from the earth, and infuses berries with an almost unbearable sweetness. The sun's gift of rich exuberance that permeates the coldest heart is a bounty brought to us by the Oak King. This is a time of passion and creation, of the growth of love and the exquisite joy of being. As the Oak King stands tall and stretches his fully leaved branches to the nourishing sun, he reaches his zenith. As the sun stands still for a moment at the apex of the solar arc, the Oak King holds his breath, for he feels the shadow of his mirror self waiting to claim his time. The Oak King has done his job. He's brought the sun. Although we mortals are only beginning to revel in the joy of shedding warm garments and spending languid afternoons in the shade of a welcoming tree, the Oak King knows it's time to begin his withdrawal and let the Holly King creep onto the scene to lead the cycle through harvest time to midwinter. For the fairies, there is great joy in this moment, because it is one of the markers on the wheel of life that reminds us all of the eternal cycles. They ask us to honor the Oak King, who has done such a magnificent job of summoning the sun to bring the fullness of life to our realm. They remind us that even in the midst of great sorrow and grievous destruction, the Oak King and the Holly King will continue their dance. The eternal ebb and flow of life is a mystery that is secret even to them, but they know they are a part of it, and that the web holds them, as it does all of us, including the kings of oak and holly. Bright blessings at this midsummer. Thank you, Bridget. If you want a copy of that, instead of asking me, write to Bridget. Bridget@fairywoodland.com. Bridget@fairywoodland.com. And maybe she will share it with you. That is nice. And like I say, in reading that to Molly tonight, she certainly understands the parts about the fairies. And she understands the part about the Oak King right in front of our door. You walk out our door, our front door, and right to the left is a huge oak tree that is about, I think the last time we had, I call him the... what do I call them, the guys? The arborist. The last time we had one come out, he said it was probably about 80 years old. It looks bigger than older than that to me. It's a huge red oak. So we here in the Molloy compound are familiar with the oaks. Plus we have holly bushes, so I guess it's a... Anyway, Molly, you know, I'm just saying, Molly, God, I think any kid would get this, even though there's some concepts in here that are a little bit, like I said, a little esoteric for a little kid. They get the gist of it. They always do, don't they? We adults think that kids don't get as much as they really do. Anyway, that was from Bridget at fairywoodland.com, who is one of our ethics advisors to this program. See, now you understand why when you hear something like that. Do we have time for Prairie 2? I think so. Should you put your savings in rounds? Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent. Obama came eye to eye with China over the value of the renminbi, their money, and China blinked. Okay, really, they said they're going to blink sometime in the future. The Obama administration is sending signals that they are a bit skeptical of this non-movement, saying that how much China actually revalues the yuan is what matters. World markets are all up on the promise, just the same. If you have wondered why Chinese currency has two names, renminbi means the people's currency. They are communists, you know. And yuan is the old name for money and literally means round. Yuan used to have modifiers attached, like gold or silver. So what they now use is the renminbi yuan. China has a fantastically high savings rate, running 40% of income. China has put a lot of emphasis on gold mining and has over 1,100 tons in the government vaults. But they also encourage the people to put part of their savings into gold, silver, and copper coins, or rounds. It seems that the Saudis have quietly bought 180 tons of gold over the last 2 years, more than doubling their holdings. And that is not counting privately held bullion. This is according to an international trade group made up of the big gold mining companies that tries to track who's holding what. Precious metals are doing a gold rush business as the wealthy stock their private vaults with a few pounds now and then, which adds up to more than the occasional 100-ton purchase by governments. I'm not advocating buying gold unless you really have a lot of wealth to protect. It's a libertarian talking point that everybody should buy gold. And like everything they say, there is a kernel of truth buried in a pile of horse apples. If things get so bad that nobody will take currency, then they won't be selling you anything for gold either. Gold doesn't make a good hedge against inflation since the price can run counter to inflation unless you can afford to hold it for 20 years. It always balances out. You could buy an excellent man's suit of clothes for an ounce of gold 400 years ago. And that has been true ever since. You won't make money buying gold now. The people making money are telling you to buy it now, and they are selling. But if your floor is starting to sag from the stacks of canned goods and you still have money burning a hole in your mattress, well, gold does take up less space. PrairieNumeral2.com. Send him an email. Or at least visit his website. Do we own any gold? Are you? We don't even have gold in our teeth. All right. Break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. Gulf oil full of methane, adding new concerns. So in the Associated Press, it is an overlooked danger in the Gulf or in the oil spill crisis. The crude gushing from the well contains vast amounts of natural gas that could pose a serious threat to the Gulf of Mexico's fragile ecosystem. Could pose? According to AP, the oil emanating from the seafloor contains about 40% methane compared with about 5% methane found in typical oil deposits. That's according to a Texas A&M University oceanographer who is studying the impact of methane from the spill. That means huge quantities of methane have entered the Gulf, potentially suffocating marine life and creating dead zones where oxygen is so depleted that nothing lives. The Texas A&M oceanographer said, quote, this is the most vigorous methane eruption in modern human history, end quote. Methane is a colorless, odorless, and flammable substance that is a major component in the natural gas used to heat people's homes. Petroleum engineers typically burn off excess gas attached to crude before the oil is shipped off to the refinery. A BP spokesman said the company was burning about 30 million cubic feet of gas daily from the source of the leak, adding to about 450 million cubic feet, adding up to about 450 million cubic feet since the containment effort started 15 days ago. That's enough gas to heat about 500,000 homes for 4 days. But that figure does not account for gas that eluded containment efforts and wound up in the water, leaving behind huge amounts of methane. The National Science Foundation funded research on methane in the Gulf amid concerns about the depths of the oil plume and questions what role natural gas was playing in keeping the oil below the surface. And it goes on. Wow. the disaster. Well, here you go. In early June, a research team led by so-and-so of the Institute for Undersea Research and Technology at the University of Georgia. Oh, yeah, we shared some of her report with you, Samantha Joy. They investigated a 15-mile-long plume drifting southwest from the leak site. They said they found methane concentrations up to 10,000 times higher than normal, and oxygen levels depleted by 40% or more. The scientists found that some parts of the plume had oxygen concentrations just shy of the level that tips ocean waters into the category of dead zone, a region uninhabitable to fish, crabs, shrimp, and other marine creatures. In an email, Professor Joy called her findings, quote, the most bizarre-looking oxygen profiles I have ever seen anywhere. The pig man is taking aim at Republican leaders for demanding that Joe Barton retract his apology to BP CEO Tony Hayward during last week's congressional. Why not? Why is this news? Of course, on his radio show today, Limbaugh suggested the Republican leadership likely agrees with Barton's sentiments, but are driven by recent national polls, which suggest the majority of America support Obama's push for BP to set aside the $20 billion. Limbaugh said, quote, it was a shakedown, pure and simple, and somebody had the audacity to call it that, what it was, and now everybody's running for the hills. All I have to do is look at the polling. We're talking about Republicans inside the Beltway. All I have to do is look at the polling, Dad, and media coverage and find out what they're going to do. So, what do people have to hear from right-wingers, neo-Nazis, corporatists, slugs like Rush Limbaugh, scum like Michelle Bachmann, pieces of human waste like Joe Barton? What does it take to realize that all of these right-wingers, that would be all the Republicans, are in favor of BP and to hell with the small people? Like Limbaugh said on his program last week, learn how to dumpster dive, kiddies. Go get your food out of a dumpster. I wonder how many people in the Gulf Coast will continue to vote Republican. Huh? I'll bet you the majority of them. After all, we're talking about Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Florida, even after all of this, even after the truth comes tumbling out of these bastards, they don't care about you, Mr. and Miss Teabagger or Mr. and Miss Republican. They don't care about you. They will stomp you into the ground and then pee on your grave. And you people just don't get it, do you? You right-wingers who listen to this program and you sit there, should I call him or should I don't? No, don't. Just don't, all right? Because I don't want to hear from you. But just take it from yours truly that you are being mocked, made fun of, you're being fleeced, you're being sliced and diced, and you stupid bastards don't get it. I'm astonished. Oh well, let's get Republicans in every branch of government come November 2012. Yeah, let's do that. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Hey, during the break, I got this really interesting email from Corina Baker in Boise, Idaho. She writes, I'm a 42-year-old mom. I'm not religious. I support gay marriage. The direction this country is heading has me scared for my children's futures. Over the last 3 years, I've been scanning the different radio stations, listening to talk show hosts and their varying opinions. I believed if I listened to commentators from the left and the right, I would probably fall into the middle somewhere and I would form my own opinions. I have to tell you, that did not happen. You are so right in the fact that some hosts spew lies and hate and have no factual basis for what they're saying. Several times in the last couple of weeks, my jaw has fallen open at what I'm hearing. Unfortunately, you are the guiltiest. You spew more lies and hate than anyone else I have listened to. I honestly tried to stay middle of the road and listen to each side's opposing idea. You have drove me, Seek, into the deep right. Now I can see why so many of the discussions I get involved with sway to the right. That side makes more sense. You are a hater, and your opinion no longer matters to me. Solely because of you, I will no longer tune into the serious left station. Signed, Corina Baker, Boise, Idaho. Really? Me? Moi? I spew more lies and hate than anyone? Okay, Corina. I know you're still listening, and you'll continue to listen, but I just thought I would share your email with our 37 listeners. Dave in Kentucky writes, Mike, over the years, I've tried to accept Limbaugh as entertainment of a sort. He has talent, after all. And he is just a manifestation of what Professor Hofstadter referred to as the paranoid strain in American politics. For some reason, his callous skit on the plight of people who are actually hungry is the last straw. There is something inhuman about that. An affront to whatever ability I might have to empathize with other people. I need that much more than I need to be entertained. At long last, I must admit that Rush Limbaugh actually has no sense of humor. Far more important is that Limbaugh's program implies that it is socially acceptable to bash the poor and the weak, to locate our own self-hatred in the lives and experiences of the poor, even poor children. Katha Pollitt, the great feminist essayist, pointed out years ago that countries in Europe with a third of our GDP would never tolerate the acres of obviously neglected kids who roam our city streets. You've been overseas, so you know what I'm saying is real. There is no excuse to take resources which civilized folks spend on the children and redirect it to luxuries for the rich, bailouts for the banks, etc. That's what Limbaugh is really laughing at. It's knee-slapping funny. Dave in Kentucky. So there you go. Comments about two talk show hosts. The hater, Mike Malloy, and the pig man. Kate, writing from Occupied Sonora. Mike, granted, I don't have a TV, so I'm not sure what is behind the Larry King fundraiser. I'm struck dumb. Who's going to be in charge of distributing the money? Who will be accountable? What a nightmare. The money that was raised for Katrina survivors by George I and Clinton wasn't released to the public. It was kept in a fund that had so many conditions and strings attached to it that no one knew how to get to it or get it to the folks who needed it. As far as I know, it's still laying in Jackson, Mississippi, under the care of King Haley. I would advise that anyone who's responding to the pathos, the oily birds and the dead dolphins, the hand-wringing hysteria, would consider sending money, reconsider sending any money to this effort. Y'all have no idea where the money will go. On this, my sacred holiday, I feel so sad. Kate. A few letters from listeners. The Glenn Greenwald, writing at slot.com, salon.com, has pointed out the WikiLeaks founder had his passport confiscated. He is the founder of the website. His name is Julian Assange, A-S-S-A-N-G-E. He's the one that got somebody to de-encrypt the video from Iraq showing American military personnel in helicopters shooting down unarmed civilians and kind of making jokes about it. Anyway, Glenn writes, this is a reminder that one can't run around exposing the secrets of the most powerful governments, militaries, and corporations in the world without consequences. Here's what he's talking about. The Australian founder of the whistleblower website WikiLeaks had his passport confiscated by police when he arrived in Melbourne, Australia last week. Julian Assange, who does not have an official home base and travels every 6 weeks, told the Australian Current Affairs Program Dateline that immigration officials had said his passport was going to be canceled because it was looking worn. However, he then received a letter from the Australian Communication Minister Stephen Conroy's office stating that the recent disclosure on WikiLeaks of a blacklist of websites the Australian government is preparing to ban had been referred to the Australian Federal Police. Last year, WikiLeaks published a confidential list of websites that the Australian government is preparing to ban under a proposed internet filter, which in turn caused the whistleblower site to be placed on that list, WikiLeaks. And then Greenwald says the Australian document was so damaging because the Australian government claimed that the to-be-banned websites were all associated with child pornography. But the list of the targeted sites included many which had nothing to do with pornography. That WikiLeaks was then added to the list underscores the intended abuse. Forcing Assange to remain in Australia would likely be crippling to WikiLeaks. One of the ways which WikiLeaks protects the confidentiality of its leakers and evades detection is by having Assange constantly move around, managing WikiLeaks from his laptop, backpack, and numerous countries around the world. Preventing him from leaving Australia would ensure that authorities around the world would know where he is and would impede his ability to maintain the secrecy on which WikiLeaks relies. Secrecy is the crux of institutional power, the principal weapon for maintaining it. And there are very few entities left which can truly threaten that secrecy. As the worldwide controversy over the Iraqi Apache helicopter attack compellingly demonstrated, WikiLeaks is one of the very few entities capable of doing so and fearlessly devoted to that mission. It's hardly surprising that those responsible would be harassed and intimidated by governmental agencies. It'd be far more surprising if they weren't. But it's a testament to how truly threatening they perceive outlets like WikiLeaks to be. And then Glenn adds, I hope to speak with Assange later today and will provide more details as I know them. So for those of you who have been suggesting that Kathy and I might consider, I guess Blue and a couple other people say, you know, why don't you come to Australia? Why? I would be trying to escape that kind of government madness, not go from one form of government madness to another. No offense. Ah, God. All right, when we come back, a couple more emails, a couple more points I want to bring up, and then we will probably do some phone calls, all right? Stick around. We have miles to go before we sleep. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. I got an email from our education affairs correspondent today, Kay. It's not really about education affairs, but I want to share it with you anyway. It's about the crazy, you know, this another one of these crazy bastards on the right. They're endless, aren't they? Glenn, the suicider, Beck. Hi, Mike. I always had my clock radio tuned to Green 960, so when the alarm went off this morning, I caught the Media Matters Minute. What a way to wake up. My blood pressure skyrocketed within seconds. Here's why. Quote, this is from MediaMatters.org. Glenn Beck took another ride on the race train tonight when on his Fox News program he claimed that President Obama won't meet with BP CEO Tony Hayward because Hayward is white. Beck asked, quote, what is it that Barack Obama knows that he won't even bother to meet with a guy to hear him out? Well, you know, until he changed his mind a couple of days later. What is it that the dictator of Iran, the crazy guy in Iran, has in the credibility department that the CEO of BP doesn't have? What is it? Tell me. I'd like to know. Does the fact that BP CEO is a capitalist, is that what does it? You know, when I meet with those capitalists, he's a white CEO. Maybe that's it. He's a white CEO. Then Beck played a 15-year-old clip of Obama talking about corporate responsibility as his evidence. He played this part, Obama saying, quote, and I really want to emphasize the word responsibility. I think that whether you are a white executive living out in the suburbs who doesn't want to pay taxes to inner city children to, you know, for them to go to school, end quote. Glenn Beck then used this as evidence that Obama is a racist. I know. Man, all those white executives, what racist they are. They're all alike, you know. They just hate those inner city kids. Wow, inner city kids. That's not code language, is it? And gee, all those white executives that don't want to pay their taxes have to go to, well, that sounds an awful lot like profiling. It's almost like he's generalizing profiling and stereotyping. The problem is that Beck played a heavily edited audio clip. Here's the full quote, courtesy of Media Matters. Quote, Obama. Right, and I think that is going to be happening, and we can't ignore it. I think whether or not my children or your children will have to struggle with these same issues depends on what we do and whether we take some mutual responsibility for bridging the divisions that exist right now. And I really want to emphasize the word responsibility. I think that whether you are a white executive living out in the suburbs who doesn't want to pay taxes to inner city kids to, well, for them to go to school, or you are an inner city child who doesn't want to take responsibility for keeping your street safe and clean, both of those groups have to take some responsibility if we're going to get beyond the kinds of divisions that we faced right now. End quote. Obama. Imagine that. When you read the whole transcript, you discover that Obama wasn't singling out white CEOs at all. He was discussing the divisions that the country faces and the need to get past them. When you see the whole text, it becomes clear who the real racist is, and it isn't President Barack Obama. Once again, Glenn Beck jumps headfirst into the cesspool that is race-based politics, and he hopes that his audience and the rest of America is too dumb to notice his obvious distortions. His desperate cry for attention today is even more evidence that his show is sinking fast and that Beck is now truly desperate. And Beck's teabagging minions will respond on cue. That's right! Obama hates white people! We're going to take our country back! Another shining example of why I'm questioning the whole notion of social progress these days. Okay. But, you know, that's the point. That's what I've talked about so many times. Every single right-wing commentator, and they are legion, on radio and television, in media, will lie to you. On radio and television, every single thing out of Beck's mouth about Obama, out of Limbaugh's mouth about anything, out of Hannity's mouth, Limbaugh's little parrot boy, out of all these right-wing bastards, every single thing you hear is a lie, is misinformation, is disinformation. It's a lie, as evidenced by the thing I just shared with you. What's her name? Corinna, the woman who wrote to me, said that I've listened to all the programs and you're a liar. Jesus Christ. Here's an answer about South Carolina, explaining South Carolina and the fact that this guy, Green, is now the Democratic nominee for the Senate. We'll be back. Stick around. Rahm Emanuel is being pushed out of the White House. About time, wouldn't you think? I'll tell you about that, too. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Liberal helping of truth? It's more Mike Malloy.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. 25 before the hour. So Mark in Manhattan, who is signs himself a proud proud podcast subscriber, writes, "Hey Mike, sorry to write to you about Thursday's show, but I'm catching up on my podcasts. Anyway, my cousin lives in South Carolina, and he's a Democrat, so I called him up. Yep, sure enough, he voted for Green. When I asked him how, why, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, he said, now just between you and me, I thought I was voting for the Green candidate. I thought he was the environmentalist. I kid you not, Mike, so maybe that's it. The South Carolinian voters saw Green and thought they were voting for the environment. On everyone's mind since the whole BP disaster. Heck, maybe this was the Republicans' initial strategy. Find someone named Green, and it doesn't matter how smart or dumb he is. This makes sense to me, as it feels like something those Frank Luntz-worshipping bastards would do. Let's face it, Mike, the Republicans are better at this kind of semantic warfare than are the Democrats." Mark in Manhattan. And also, there was a Supreme Court ruling today that blew right by, the significance of which blew right by most of us. You probably heard about it if you listened at all to NPR today. It damn sure wasn't on any of the newscasts that I'm aware of. It's being called the most significant ruling on free speech rights in terrorism cases. And what happened was the Supreme Court today upheld the constitutionality of a federal law passed, I believe, during the Bush years, that makes it a crime to provide, quote, material support, end quote, to foreign terrorist groups. Now, right away, you think, well, yeah, what's wrong with that? Well, in the first place, the old adage, one person's terrorist group is another person's freedom-fighting organization. But anyway, the case was Holder, as in Eric, versus Humanitarian Law Project. And it was brought by an American organization that tried to teach members of the Kurdish Workers' Party. You know, the Kurds, Turkey, Iran, Kurds, Kurdistan, yada, yada. This organization, American organization, sought to teach members of the Kurdish Workers' Party, known as the PKK, how to resolve disputes under international law and how to engage in political advocacy on behalf of the Kurds in Turkey. Now, when you stop and think what their advocacy has been for the longest time, the advocacy between the Kurds and the Turkish military, the Kurdish military and the Turkish military, has been slaughter. We'll slaughter you, you slaughter us, and we'll keep this killing going back and forth. The PKK has been designated a foreign terrorist group by the State Department. Now, the only reason it's been designated a foreign terrorist group is this is the way our government, our State Department, our CIA, our terrorists convince Turkey to do things like allow us to use their airspace to carry out our death activities in Iraq and Afghanistan, among other things. So in order to satisfy the Turks, the U.S. State Department, the CIA, the NSA, the DIS, the PQL, whatever the hell, all these secret organizations under Bush 1 and Clinton and Bush 2 and now Obama, we make the deal with Turkey. Hey, we're going to designate the Kurdish Workers' Party as a terrorist organization. How's that? So our State Department has called them a terrorist organization. The opinion was a 6-3 opinion. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote that barring such expert advice or assistance and service did not violate the First Amendment. In other words, even if the supporters meant to promote only the group's nonviolent ends, it didn't matter. If you support them, provide material support, what does that mean? Material support is anything that's not immaterial. So what does that mean? $100. That's material. Pair of shoes. Hey, that's material too. you will be designated an enemy of the United States because you have provided material support to a terrorist organization. Now, as Michael in Roswell writes, do you think this ruling might eventually have an effect on groups like WikiLeaks? And he answers his own question. You bet it will. The designation of terrorism is entirely arbitrary and entirely within the purview of the executive branch. I have a friend who's been a criminal defense attorney for 30 years, and his reply was, oh, blank, this is bad. I give up. The blanks won, and the Constitution is meaningless. So, when you are asked to make charitable donations, be careful, because it doesn't make any difference how, what your intention is. Unless you know for certain whether or not the State Department has or intends to list the organization to which you're going to donate material support, a terrorist organization, if you don't know, don't do it. Because if it was designated a terrorist organization to satisfy, Hamas is designated, for example, a terrorist organization. Why? To satisfy the Israelis. The PKK is designated a terrorist organization. Why? To satisfy the Kurds. What's the group in China that is designated a terrorist organization? To satisfy the Chinese. None of these groups, the Uyghurs in China, U-I-G-H-U-R-S, Uyghurs, none of these groups have ever attacked America. So why are we calling them terrorist organizations, right? It just keeps on. Hey, I wish we had less focus sometimes on this program on this horrific disaster, cataclysmic event that's occurring in the Gulf. I wish it weren't there, because it not only do I wish it weren't happening for the simple reason that the whole planet would be better off if it weren't. But also, on a very pedestrian level, just strictly from a talk show point of view, it eliminates everything else. Everything else becomes secondary or further down the list. And rightly so. It's a horrific issue. But it means it knocks off the radar stories like, what the hell is going on in Chicago this weekend? You may or may not know that Chicago has become a killing ground. It's all young people, these gangs. 52 people were shot this weekend in Chicago. 8 of them are dead. 52 people shot on the street. One eruption that left, I think, 2 dead and about 8 or 9 wounded was erupted out of a Father's Day party. Well, I'll tell you what. All that stuff we quoted to you over the years, and you already know about what Jesus said about the poor and the homeless, and even the Old Testament, the Jewish part of the Bible, talks about, you know, if there's a stranger in your land, to treat them with respect, take care of them, don't turn them away. And these laws that have been passed in Arizona that are just anti-Jesus, anti-Moses, anti-common sense, anti-dignity, anti-Allah, all of it. All these laws against immigrants, against undocumented workers, against people. So apparently, We should have called Pat Robertson about this today, Kathy, but apparently God has gotten extremely pissed off, and now he's decided to burn Arizona. He's going to burn it. Have they got those fires under control yet? No? Those fires are still raging in Arizona? Damn. Well, you people out there better pay attention. According to Pat Robertson, that's probably why the oil spill occurred, right? Because of that damn Mardi Gras, you know, where they have gay people. So, you know, God is not arbitrary at all. He'll just beat your ass if you do. Well, look what he did to Moses. He got so angry at Moses after wandering around for 40 years in the desert, he said, no, Moses, you're not coming over. No. I'll take your son, but not you. To you. Chicago. Ra, Washington insiders say Rahm Emanuel will quit within 6 to 8 months in frustration at the unwillingness of Obama to bang heads together to get policy pushed through. Well, what a shame.
Seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Yeah, this was a mind scrambler today from Fremont, Nebraska. Fremont, Nebraska. Apparently, the people in Fremont, Nebraska, are angry over a surge in the number of Hispanic residents, and they voted today. We don't have the results yet, but they voted today in a referendum on a new law that would require foreigners to get a license to live in their precious town. They're voting on a plan to ban foreign people from renting homes or having jobs. Jesus, God, this country is just sucking into a spiraling sewer of filth. The referendum in Fremont, this is according to The Guardian in the UK. The referendum in Fremont, Nebraska has been prompted by a sharp rise in Hispanic people drawn by work at local meat packing plants, combined with fears over job losses because of the economic downturn. If approved, tenants, renters who are not U.S. citizens would be required to get what is called an occupancy license from the city council. Even residents of nursing homes would be required to obtain such a license. Federal law requires employers to verify the immigration status of workers, but the proposed law in Fremont, Nebraska, would also open violators to local sanctions. Supporters insist it's not racist. No. It's not racist. It's just we got to protect our jobs and our health care and our education for local people because, you know, the town's Hispanic population has surged in the past 20 years. Surged from 165 to more than 2,000. It surged 20 years to add 1,835 people. What is that, 90 a year? Woo! Watch out, Fremont. It is unclear what proportion of those are in the U.S. illegally, those 2,000, but the big meat packing plants where many works say they only employ people whose immigrant status has been verified. The Fremont Tribune has reported cases of Hispanic people who are legal residents being verbally abused and told to go back to Mexico, even if they're from, you know, Guatemala, Honduras. Jerry Hart, one of the three sponsors of the legislation, told the Fremont Tribune that the proposed law is in part a security measure. He said, the federal law was put into place for a reason, to control how many people come into this country and to regulate the people so they don't have communicable diseases and are not bringing in drugs or having criminal records. And these people who are sneaking in, you don't know what you're getting. We could have terrorists and people involved in drugs. End quote. John Wiegert, another of the sponsors of the referendum, said, a lot of them are coming here for the American dream, and they're causing nothing but an American nightmare for me. Oh, that's witty, John. That is so witty. The governor of Nebraska, Dale Heineman, that's what it says, Heineman, has declined to take a position, even though he's a former Fremont City Council member and owns and rents out property in the city. The ACLU is suing the state of Nevada over a proposed referendum to introduce tough immigration laws similar to the measures in force in Arizona. The proposed Nevada law would require non-U.S. citizens to carry proof they have the right to be in the U.S. and make it illegal to transport or house undocumented immigrants, among other measures. Blah, 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 blah. Some business owners back in Fremont, Nebraska, oppose this measure, which you know will pass. They claim that Hispanic residents bring money to the town, and these business owners are concerned about the cost to taxpayers of legal challenges by civil liberties groups. What the hell has happened to this country? Huh? I mean, seriously. I mean, it's one thing to say, what the hell has happened to this country? Because taxes went up or somebody voted Democratic. You know, that's just, you know, conversation. What the hell has happened to this country? Boy, I don't know. When I was a kid, they used to deliver milk every morning. What's happened to this country? Nah, that's not what we're talking about. What's happened to this country when laws like this are being passed, when the Supreme Court rules that corporations have the same rights as human beings, when the Supreme Court rules that the right of free association no longer exists, and if you happen to contribute anything of material value, to an organization about which you don't know everything, and maybe that organization has a branch somewhere that the U.S. State Department has labeled terrorist in order to satisfy one of our allies, you could be put in jail for 15 years. Wow. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Kate writes in about the fires in Arizona. She says it's not God. She writes, Mike, our wonderful fires here in Arizona are Mother Gaia's way of scouring away the underbrush to allow the sun to shine on the forest floors to rejuvenate the wonderful growth. Folks wring their hands. Oh, ain't that awful! Because they build too close to the woods, don't use appropriate building materials. Fires are necessary for new growth. It's humans who bring on their own misery. Screw Pat Robertson and his insane ilk and the faux news who play the news loops over and over, stirring up hysteria. We have fires every year. No one learns the lessons. That's right. It might have been the queers in Flagstaff that caused this. All 19 of them. Or the aliens who took all the jobs. Or the drunk Injuns who hang out in the Wally World parking lot. Burn, baby, burn. You ought to see how beautiful the growth is in the national forest in the spring. Takes your breath away. Kate. And yet, somebody like Pat Robertson of these religious crazies can say, well, it's because, you know. And this, and then we're going to come to your phone calls. Michael wrote in a couple of days ago about Barack Obama. Oh, and by the way, it appears not only is Rahm Emanuel bailing out, but Peter Orszag, the White House budget chief, is going to leave also in the next few weeks. That's according to the Washington Post. Anyway, Michael writes, Obama screwed himself when he surrounded himself with hawks, blue dogs, and Wall Streeters. It doesn't matter what he says, he almost always is going to end up doing the wrong thing. For example, this is a guy, Obama, who's instructed his negotiating team to agree to commercial whaling again. There's no good reason for it except to placate the Japanese on the advice of his business counselors. FDR called Wall Street banksters, while Obama is seeking the advice of the Business Roundtable, which effectively operates as a lobby for multinational CEOs. Obama appointed a bunch of rich deficit hawks whose entire existence is devoted to not paying taxes to a commission that is inevitably going to recommend destroying Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and he's going to go along with their advice. I've always been suspicious of Obama because of his long association with the University of Chicago Business School, which incorporates both the law school and the economics department. That school has promoted precisely the policies that have caused us and so many other countries harm. And Obama was in the middle of it for a long time. I'm reasonably certain that his thinking has been shaped, warped, by the very people that are anathema to progressives. So it's impossible for Obama to either understand the hostility he's engaging in with his base or to get the advice he most needs. Unfortunately, he's a pawn of the corporatists because he's one of them in spirit. To my mind, it doesn't matter if he really thinks the actions are helping ordinary people in some sort of trickle-down fashion, because they aren't. The Democrats have been going sour on their core constituencies and beliefs for a long time, and Obama typifies everything that's wrong with the Democrats today. He is an establishment politician. His first core obligation is to keep the foreign policy and economic elites in this country happy. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. The lines are open, so if you'd like to join the conversation live and in real time, call us. The number is 877-996-2556. Stephen is calling from Natick, Mass. Hey, Stephen.
Steve the banker, how you doing?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
You look great tonight.
Oh, you've got your little thing, your you
Malloy vision.
Malloy vision going. You know, I don't know about this. We've had it for several weeks now, but I don't know, man. I don't know how much longer I can take this.
You know? I predict you're going to be replacing what's his name on What's that old guy?
Another old guy?
No, the old guy.
Oh, Larry King.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to replace him.
No, the day that happens, Steve, they'll be given drinks of ice water in hell, trust me.
Anyway, I just wanted really quickly to get into one number.
Okay. Hey, you got to cut the volume down there.
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. Okay,
no big deal.
1 second. Sorry about that. One number, but I'm going to go over three companies real quick.
Okay.
And the three companies are three companies that were so huge, so gigantic, so scary that we couldn't get rid of them,
mm-hmm.
even though they stole millions and billions from us. Goldman Sachs.
Right.
Citigroup.
Right.
And Morgan Stanley.
Right.
And just, if you have a pencil, just write the number 85 next to each one.
85.
Right.
Okay.
And 85 times 3.
Times 3.
Right.
Which is 255.
Right. That is correct. You win. So, this is how big BP is. $292 billion in revenue in 1 year. Three times the size of three companies that are so huge in revenue
mm-hmm.
that we couldn't touch them. And that is how big BP is in 1 year.
So,
now there's lots more numbers I can go over, and maybe I'll do that another time. But this is just the revenue.
Okay, and the point of that, I mean, that's very interesting, but what's the point? That they're only putting up $20 billion in a shakedown fund?
Well, right. I don't want to get any more complicated than you want to, but right, exactly. The $20 billion is a toenail.
Yeah.
Because it's not coming from money they have in the bank. What me and the people in my group would call, you know, assets, something you already have in the bank.
Right.
The money that's going to be coming to those people down in Mississippi or wherever is going to be your money and mine. It's going to be revenue that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to be touching them in their savings book. It's money coming out of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
That's about to be coming to them from you and me.
Right. Also, it's my understanding they don't put this in one lump sum. This is spread over,
that is
what,
right.
4 years?
That is correct. That's another terrible decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because, right, now since they can spread it over 3 or 4 years, as you can see, the revenue is so gigantic. And again, I don't want to make it any more complicated. It's just simply so huge. Three times larger than Citigroup
mm-hmm.
or Goldman Sachs. I mean, it's so huge that you think they're going to feel it anywhere?
No.
No.
Of course not.
So it's really nothing. It's a pimple on the backside of their savings and loan book or something.
Well, if they're putting up $5 billion a year for 4 years or whatever,
right.
Starting with a $5 billion deposit, $5 billion, $25 billion would be 10%. So $5 billion would be 2.5% of their revenue.
Right.
Is that right? 2.5%.
Well, yeah. But that was revenue from 2007. It's actually a little higher.
It's higher than
now.
That. Well, that's the part that to me. It kind of proves what Michael from Roswell just wrote to me about Obama being a corporatist himself. He's not going to do anything that will punish the foreign affairs or the business elites in this country. It's just not going to happen.
If I was president...
Hey, hold on a second, Stephen. I got to do a break. Hold on. We'll come back and finish up after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows the boat is leaking. Everybody.
your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. We're talking with Steve the banker from Massachusetts. During the break here, I got an email regarding what we're talking about from Bruce. And he says the $20 billion is in theory a fund for the, quote, small people, end quote, that you can get to without hiring a lawyer. Mike Papantonio said it was a good thing if run right. The bigger businesses like hotels and condo companies will be going after their own billions, plus the billions in cleanup and more billions in fines. BP stock is still rated a dump at any price. So according to what Bruce Enberg is writing here, there will be more than $20 billion. That $20 billion is to take care of what the chairman of BP called the small people.
Yeah.
You know, well, the people that make their money from the sea on whatever level, sport yeah. fishing or commercial fishing. Or
well, if you remember, of course, every time a BP executive says we're going to give that money out, it's to, of course, people who, you know, have, you know, they somehow have magically passed all the tests.
Well, you know, I remember part of the horrific scams perpetrated against the people of Mississippi after Katrina. Haley Barbour, the large governor of Mississippi, who was a former member of the White Citizens Council and the head of the Republican Party, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He made sure that some of the money that went that was supposed to go to the rebuilding of the Mississippi Gulf Coast went to developers who used it to build luxury rental units near Ole Miss. University of Mississippi, so that when, you know, the fat cats came to town for the big games, they'd have a great place to stay. And, you know, University of Mississippi is nowhere near the coast.
Well, so, I got to say, you know, you are, beside me just being a banker, Mike.
Yeah.
I am an experienced four-time disaster loan underwriter.
Oh, yeah?
For the SBA. And so I worked with FEMA, and I worked with the Red Cross, so you have a guy who's very experienced in all this.
You're familiar with all this crap.
Oh, I've been through it all in Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, and the New York region, and the whole thing.
Hey, how are things going in Haiti? I guess that's all fixed. That's all fixed now, right? Nobody talks about it anymore.
Actually, there are still some small people still providing some money there.
I'll bet.
But I wanted to say one more thing, and then I'll go.
Okay.
And that is another comparison, because it's always important to make comparisons so that the American public can really get some kind of grasp. As big as all of our gigantic corporations are, you know, mm-hmm. the biggest non-oil company that we have in the United States, other than Walmart, forget about Walmart,
right,
is Ford.
Right.
And their revenue in 2007 was $172 billion. So even if, and their profit was a lot less, but mm-hmm. We're not going to talk about that tonight. So if you cut British Petroleum, and if you cut Exxon, and if you cut Royal Dutch Shell, which happens to be the largest company in the world for revenue, for sales.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Exxon and Shell are 2 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually make BP look kind of small. That's how scary large the revenue is to Shell and Mobil. And if you look at these three top companies, they're three of the top four. Actually, I wasn't going to do this, but if you look at it another way and look at it from what you and I do every day,
mm-hmm.
which is spend money at the pump,
mm-hmm.
and you look at Dutch Shell and their sales of $458 billion and their profit of $40 to $50 billion a year, Exxon the same level, and then BP right behind them. So if you really took away that, instead of that $4 or $3 at the pump, and you really just made it $2 or $1.50,
mm-hmm.
their sales would still top every other company on the planet. And Venus and Mars.
Well, you know what I get from that, from those figures, is that the oil companies, therefore, are unstoppable. There's no power on earth that can fight against that kind of economic power.
Well, the last 10 years, they've taken advantage of our oil presidency. So.
Yeah.
And on that note, I'll see you on TV.
All right. Thanks, Steve, and I appreciate the information.
You take care.
All right. You too. Time for another break. I got an email here from Mark in Melbourne, Australia, who's also watching the video feed. This is very creepy. And he's got some information about WikiLeaks editor Julian Assange. Assange? I'll refer to him as Assange until somebody corrects me. That answers some questions regarding the fact that his passport was taken. Glenn Greenwald at Ceylon, who's usually ahead of the curve, apparently is a little bit behind the curve on this one. Not much, but just enough. I'll share that with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. As promised, an email from Mark in Melbourne, Australia. He writes, "Hi, Mike. You were talking about WikiLeaks editor Julian Assange. And he was here in Melbourne a few weeks ago. And I went to see him on the 28th of May when he gave a talk at a Computer Geek and Legal Hackers monthly get-together at RMIT. Not sure what that is, Mark, but okay. Julian is a former hacker himself, apparently. I work with a guy who's involved with this geeky group, and he told me Julian was going to speak to, he's going to speak, so another truth seeker and I went along with this guy to see what Julian had to say. Julian said they did take his passport away, but they later gave it back, and he has since left the country again, as I understand it. Julian went through some of the more significant leaks that they have put up on their website and showed and discussed the Iraq helicopter video. I had never been able to watch the whole thing previously, and it was extremely hard to watch it all as he went through it, stopping at various points to discuss aspects of what we were seeing. At one point, he mentioned Hellfire missiles, and one blank in the audience, who was probably a computer games geek, asked if those were the missiles that could blow up tanks. And Julian handled it better than I would have by just saying this detail didn't really matter. It was obvious that the gravity of what Julian was showing had washed over this guy completely. But fortunately, there are many other intelligent questions from the audience. Julian did specifically talk about the almost complete lack of critical journalism in U.S. media. And he was somewhat credulous in how things are there. The only ideas he had as to why this is the case is that there is strong corporate control of U.S. media companies. That sounded very familiar to this truth seeker. He came across as a very intelligent guy, and would be awesome if you could get him on your show for a chat. Regards, Mark in Melbourne, Australia. If I knew where the hell to get in touch with him. Can you figure it out, Gabby? Julian Assange? WikiLeaks, toss an email into the web and see what happens. I would love to talk with him. Oh, my God. That would be very, very interesting. Oh, and this. Jamie in Maryland writes, Mike, per your suggestion at the top of the show for a town hall type of meeting or series of meetings to announce plans for offshore drilling, such meetings could be held in Alaska right now. In light of BP's plans to drill 2 miles below the ocean surface as soon as the bogus moratorium against deepwater drilling is lifted, However, there are two automatic problems with even having such meetings. First, that big oil and the government will tell the truth about the risk of the drilling. And second, that anyone will listen to or abide by the citizens' wishes if they oppose the drilling. Well, that's true. My idea was simply that the truth be told, and if it required bonding the people speaking. When you do just about anything legal, the theory is you tell the truth. And if you're caught in a lie, that's why some companies require a bond to be posted for certain business transactions. I think it could be done. The idea of a company that wants to take that kind of risk with the lives of hundreds of thousands of people, the very lives, plus the life and death matters of what happens when their little adventure blows up in their faces, no pun intended. Mina is in St. Paul, Nebraska.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mina.
First of all, we just found out, I went on the internet, and the Fremont Law, a bill passed, or the Fremont vote passed by 57.
It did pass.
Nothing.
I'm sorry, say it again. It did pass?
It did pass, 57%.
Wow, so that means that the people in Fremont will now require people who want to rent there who are not citizens to get registered.
Not necessarily, because Amy Miller, who is the legal director for the ACLU, is already preparing a lawsuit to make sure that this law never goes into effect.
Yeah. My God. That's almost as bad as some of the stuff they got planned down here in Georgia.
Yeah, I know. I also wanted to tell you that our regional area, we're about an hour and a half from Fremont. But we live in the Grand Island area, which is the third largest city. And our newspaper ran a poll, and it said, do you want a similar law in Nebraska that Arizona has? When I first saw it in the morning, it was 15% no and 85% yes. Contacted my peace group, and I got it up to 18% no and 82% yes. So this racism is alive and well and living out here. But I do have a positive thing to tell you.
Good.
Dave and I were delegates to our ELCA State Assembly. And there were two resolutions to be voted on. The first was that the study on sexuality that was approved at the last National Assembly be rescinded, and that they also rescind the vote where gay and lesbian ministers in committed relationships can remain on the roster. Both of those failed.
Which means
that Central Nebraska, or Nebraska, the whole state of Nebraska, ELCA Lutheran Church, has supported the National Assembly of 2009 that accepted the state sexuality study and that gay and lesbian ministers be allowed to remain on the roster and preach in churches and be called to churches.
Well, that's great, and it's also very surprising since it is the Lutheran Church. Is this the Missouri Synod?
No. We're Evangelical Lutheran Church. We're the liberals.
Oh, okay.
You know, we can have women presidents and the women can vote, and where you can't in Missouri Synod.
Right. That's right. Synod. Is that how you say it? Synod?
Yes.
Well, I think that's good, and I certainly applaud that. I feel disturbed for some reason, even though I don't live in Nebraska. Well, not for some reason, I know why, but even though I don't live there, the fact that this passed with 57% of the vote, I don't know. I've asked this question tonight a couple of times, Mina. What in the world is happening to our country? I don't get this at all. I know that from what I've read in history, there was anti-immigrant prejudice going all the way back to the Civil War. That's what the movie Gangs of New York was about. Nativist of Irish descendant in this country, fighting against Irish immigrants. And I know that the attitudes towards the Italians, my grandfather experienced, toward the Jews, toward a lot of southern, so-called southern European groups that came to this country, it was pretty vile and at times violent. And, of course, that gave rise to a lot of these protective organizations, one of which became the mafia in this country, a branch of the mafia. So I know this is not new, but I would think that we would have gotten past this.
No, as I see it, it's racism. We have a big teabagger. I can't call them a party because they're not a party. They're
right.
Teabaggers,
right.
Period.
Right.
And the teabaggers are big here. Their first rally they had, we went and tried to do a counter rally, and it was like 200 to 12. 200 of them to 12 of us.
Well, that's about equal when you consider the mental power.
You know, Dave walked away and he said, I never want to do this again.
I don't blame him. When you're surrounded with that much bigotry and ignorance, you're going to get your clothes dirty. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we attended a town hall meeting of Mike Johanns, and I jumped all over him for his vote on Acorn.
Mm-hmm.
We had people yelling at me to leave Howard County, leave Nebraska, and they would pay my way to have me live in Europe because they didn't want any liberals like me in Howard County.
Oh, my God, my God, my God.
Now, you have to realize, my grandmother came here in 1887.
Mm.
My great-grandfather came to Palmer in 1871, and they're telling me I don't have the right to be here.
I
live on a farm that's been in the family for 108 years.
Yeah, well, it's not your family's longevity, it's the audacity of your opinion.
Yes, that's it. And then I'm not very quiet.
Well, quiet women never have very much fun, so.
Oh, well, see, I have a lot of fun.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. My daughter Molly has a T-shirt that says, what does it say, Kathy? Well-behaved women never what? Never make history. And my six-year-old, soon-to-be six-year-old, wears that T-shirt. Well-behaved women never make history. And
I totally agree.
Yeah, and we're trying to explain to her exactly what that means and to maintain her hell-raising attitude that she has at six, so that when she's 16 and 26 and 66, she retains it. Mina, thanks for checking in, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, take care. Take care. Yeah, I my family is Irish and Italian, mostly Italian, but Irish too. And, you know, if you know the history of immigration in this country, you know that the Jews, the Irish, and the Italians weren't even considered white at one time. I guess we're still not. We'll be right back. It is 10 before the hour. From Susan in Sequim, Washington, who writes, Mike, there was a reporter on Nicole Sandler today, can't remember his name, I think he's from Truth Out. He said that BP will be exempt from the moratorium on its planned well in the Arctic because it won't be considered offshore. They have built a gravel island 5 miles square, and so it is considered a land well. They're going down 2 miles and out 20 miles into the Arctic Ocean. And it's very dangerous and has never been done before. BP is calling it their, quote, most challenging venture, end quote, yet. They're going to begin right away, and Obama is not stopping them. This is blanking the blank out of me. Susan in Squim, Washington. I didn't know that. Oh, boy. And from Joe, Mike, I live in Omaha, Nebraska, and after talking with the local yokels, I quickly realized the basis of this ordinance is rooted in bigotry and racism. There's a small portion of white bigots that hate brown people, and they will say or do anything to push the brown people away from them. Similar to the Jim Crow laws in the South, this ordinance is designed to separate the Hispanics from their white, homogenous Mulberry sideshow. The latest vote tally, according to Omaha.com, is 3,900 for it and 2,900 against it. That represents 15% of Fremont's eligible voters voting for the ordinance. Certainly not a mandate. Yeah, but I think it's over now, Joe. One thing the freaks of Fremont fail to realize is that the root of the problem with immigration is in Washington, D.C., not in meatpacking towns across the Midwest. When our government only approves 26,000 temporary work visas out of 1 million applications per year, or when siblings have to wait 15 years to get a green card in order to be reunited with their families, the system is broken. Opening up the borders and granting amnesty is the only solution to our immigration problem. Diversity makes us stronger. Closing down borders and segregating people makes us weaker as a community. This ordinance is completely un-American, and it makes me angry. At times, I feel like taking the flag I received after 21 years of military service and burning it on the steps of the Fremont City Hall just to show the haters how wrong they are. Joe. Oh, boy. Joe is calling from San Diego, listening on XM. Hello, Joe.
Another Joe.
Yeah, another Joe. Hey.
All right. Just unbelievable, all these things that I keep hearing. It's just nothing but bad news. And I want to tell you something. This all started 37 years ago with the oil companies back then.
Yeah.
But Kennedy didn't want to give them the oil depletion allowance anymore. He gave him the hard hat at one of those meetings, those lynchings before he got killed. And he didn't want to put the hat on. They changed the route that he was supposed to take, and he still left the car wide open. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Car goes around the corner,
right.
Comes down, I think it was Elm, he gets shot.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Now, anybody ever find out who did it? I know who did it. Who did it?
Go-between.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say somebody in the CIA.
Close. No, it was CIA mafia connected.
Yeah.
Along with the oil company. But the mafia was the one that did it.
Uh-huh.
It was, Stan Giancana was in between, in the middle, and the guy who killed him was named Lucian Sarti from the Grassy Knoll. And Carlos Marcello was the guy on the other end who had the money to put this whole, stage this whole event with that assassin. Going on, never caught the guy. He got killed, supposedly got killed in Mexico, but we never brought him to trial or anything. His government failed in doing that.
So it was
now
the...
we have. Go ahead.
So it was so the oil companies had a hand in that too, is what you're saying?
Yeah, of course they did.
Yeah, well, I don't.
They had it in there.
I don't doubt it, Joe. Listen, your call is breaking up pretty bad. We're understanding what you're saying, but it's breaking up pretty bad. So let me move on. I hope you call again, but try a landline if you have one next time you call. I appreciate it. Thanks. Betty is in Albuquerque, listening on KBQ. Hey, Betty.
Yes, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, I wanted to mention that about Julian Assange. I heard earlier during the week that he had canceled appearances in Las Vegas, Nevada, and in New York, and failed to keep an appearance with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! According to what I heard the other day, he's in hiding and that the Pentagon is after him. Daniel Ellsberg, who released the Pentagon papers, was interviewed about this situation. In addition, interviewed about Bradley Manning, the young man who was being held in Kuwait as we speak, mm-hmm. who was the one who actually shot the video of right. the helicopter shooting indiscriminately in Iraq and killing the two Reuters journalists. He's being held in Kuwait, and donations are being elicited around the country to help in his defense.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellsberg pronounced both of these men heroes of our time.
Right.
And it's just an awful situation. I just wanted to finish up by saying I have so much respect for you. I can't even begin to tell you. You are so unafraid to be angry, and I'm so full of anger about what's going on in our country right now and how misinformed and misled we are. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for all that you do.
Well, Betty, those are very kind words. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling, okay? Take care. Well, that was a nice note to end the program on. Thanks, Betty. I'll see you all tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.